Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking killer $5,000 cars and the future of EVs with Consumer Reports' Mike Quincy.
Yeah, aside from buying a home, buying a car, it's one of the most expensive one-time purchases that we make. You know, this is a part of the reason why we spend a decent amount of time talking about cars here on the show. Over 16% of American household budgets are spent on transportation. So yeah, get this one decision right and you'll have a massive boost to your personal finances. And that is why we are excited to have Mike Quincy joining us today. Mike, he is a car specialist, maybe a car nut. He's been with Consumer Reports now for nearly 30 years. He participates in the hands-on car testing that they do. He appears regularly on Consumer Reports' Talking Cars podcast. And he basically knows, like virtually all someone could know about when it comes to new and used cars. He definitely knows more about cars than I do. And so, Mike, we are excited to talk about all of that and more with you today. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on. Always happy to talk about cars and Consumer Reports.
Nice. Well, Mike, we're glad to have you because we are big fans of Consumer Reports because it's just, yeah, this wonderful service really to consumers across the country, helping us know with unbiased advice what purchasing decisions are good for us. But our first question for every guest who comes on the show is, what's your craft beer equivalent? Because Matt and I, we splurge on craft beer. We like to spend money on it while we're saving and investing well for the future.
We're drinking one now.
That's right. So what do you do? What do you spend money on? Maybe that some people might say, oh, Mike's a little crazy. He spends a little too much on that one category, but you're like, no, it's well worth it. And I'm doing the other smart stuff with my personal finances at the same time.
Well, I mean, to kind of stay on brand, I suppose a splurge when it comes to cars would be heated seats or heated steering wheel here in the Northeast. That's a big deal. But maybe down in Atlanta, it would be cooled seats or vented seats, as the manufacturers like to call them. It's one of those things that makes driving a lot nicer, more comfortable, and it's a nice feature to have. So I guess I would call that a splurge. But to keep with your craft beer theme, I used to be into beer. I've moved on to cocktails right now. Has seen my Facebook page, I'm a big martini maker. I love craft cocktails. I loved a good bourbon. So if you wanted to, you know, to leave a really nice bottle of Citadel at my doorstep or like 20-year-old scotch, that would be really cool.
All right. Okay.
Good hang with Mike.
Yeah. All right, Mike, I got a question for you on the heated seats front. I saw, is it BMW that's going to do the subscription model for heated seats? How do you feel about that sort of the hardware is already installed, but then you got to pay on a subscription monthly basis or something like that. Does that annoy you, or do you think that that's just okay?
I think that really annoys me because you're not hearing about BMW lowering the price of their car, are they? So you're paying for the hardware, you're paying for the software, and now you had to pay to actually use it. I think that's crazy. I mean, are they going to say, well, this month we're not going to let you use your transmission unless you pay us money? it doesn't make
any
sense to me.
Basically,
you guys know everything about money, and you know that the market will make decisions for manufacturers. Sometimes I hope the market pushes back and says, "You're nuts! Mm-hmm. I'm not paying to use something I've already paid for."
And going to your cooled seats here in Atlanta, I have ridden in a car that's had those vents, and it's like the most magical thing you've ever experienced. It feels like. I mean, yeah, it's wonderful. You stay nice and cool down below. I'll say that. Mike, you know, we kind of dug into your biography, basically, and on the site, up on Consumer Reports, it mentions that you are a part of some fundraising bike rides. You've participated in those. We're big fans of biking. It's kind of a core, I don't know, is it a core pillar of How to Money?
It's
certainly
I'd say so.
A part of our lifestyle. So it sounds like you're not only a fan of four-wheeled vehicles, but two as well. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. Unfortunately, my family has been hit hard with cancer. My father and mother both died of pancreatic cancer. My sister is a survivor of breast cancer. But many years ago, some friends of mine got together and joined this group called the Pan Mass Challenge. And this was run by a guy named Billy Starr, who lost his mother to cancer back in like 1979. And he and his friends wanted to do something. So they rode their bikes across Massachusetts, from west to east, and raised money for cancer, and he's been doing it ever since. And the Pan Mass Challenge Cancer Fundraiser is the largest source of money for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, which is one of the premier cancer research places and places for people to get recovery and survival rates and all that. So it's a really good cause. It's 190 miles over 2 days from Sturbridge, Massachusetts. To the end of Cape Cod, called a little town called Provincetown. And it's awesome because it's fully supported by the PMC folks, but more than that, it's supported by the people that live along the bike route. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, people are standing at the edge of their driveways, clapping their hands for us goofy bike riders in our spandex and really obnoxious colored jerseys and whatnot. The times of the ride when I'm feeling tired and it's hot, it's always like the hottest summer of the hottest weekend of the summer. Somebody's out there cheering me on, or they've got a sign holding up saying, "I'm here because of you, because I got treated at Dana-Farber." So yeah, thanks for asking. Wow. It definitely is near and dear to my heart.
That's really cool. Thanks for sharing. And yeah, it's amazing how much a cheering section can motivate you to keep going when you're like just about ready to quit. I would love to know what it's like to work at a place like Consumer Reports. You've been there, for almost 30 years, and they have this rich consumer-driven mission that I alluded to earlier. Like, what's it like to work at a place that has, at least from the outside, this mission that is just like second to none? And it feels like the mission really hasn't shifted across the decades either. They've really stayed true to the mission of serving consumers.
I think we've worked hard to kind of move the needle. So whether it's car safety, better fuel efficiency, we have put pressure on the manufacturers to make their cars better because they want a coveted, you know, Consumer Reports recommended checkmark next to their make and model on our ratings. And it means a lot to them. And I think what I've seen over the years is I think Consumer Reports had a very kind of almost a standoffish relationship with the manufacturers. We didn't want to hear from them. They didn't want to hear from us. It was like, you know, it was like enemies. And over like the last 20 years, management has really said, you know, listen, let's talk to these guys. Let's share our information with them. I mean, we're not going to let them like watch us test. We're not going to share empirical data with them. But when we've tested one of their models and there's an issue, let's talk to them before we publish it so they're not caught off guard. Sure. And we've done that really successfully. We contacted Tesla after we tested a whole bunch of Tesla models, but one of them had really bad braking distances. And we contacted, my boss actually spoke with Elon Musk and he said, all right, this is what's going on. This is what we find. And they went back and they looked at their software and they did an over-the-air update. And lo and behold, we retested and it got better. So they made the car better. And I think that's what Consumer Reports' mission really is trying to do. They're trying to make products safer. They're affordable. We're realistic about, you know, I know we're going to be talking about EVs and they are, you know, I'm going to have, you know, good news and bad news about EVs. and so we're seeing that, you know, the evolution of the automotive marketplace and definitely EVs are part of it. But we also know that not everyone can afford a Tesla or an Audi e-tron or a Mercedes EQS, which is like $125,000. So there has to be alternatives for people on the lower price spectrum. And we're here to serve those folks too.
That's right. Well, I mean, one of the things, like one of y'all's approaches is like Consumer Reports, y'all actually buy the cars that you test drive. Can you explain why it is that y'all do that?
I think that's that what really separates us from any other publisher. And I still kind of use the old term publishing as in like, you know, paper and stuff. And yes, we do still produce a magazine, but obviously the most competitive publishers these days are all online. But unlike other automotive reporters, automotive journalists who get free cars from the manufacturers that are mostly specially built, you know, hand built, made sure that they're probably much better than the normal consumer would get. Consumer Reports buys its own test products. The Auto Test Center where I work spends about $2.5 to $3 million a year buying test cars. We don't tell them we're from Consumer Reports until the morning of delivery. Since 2001, I've bought about 166 cars for the test program. So I've honestly seen it all. I've heard it all from every dealer that you can imagine. And that kind of keeps us independent. We're not, and I used to be on the other side of automotive journalism where, you know, you get flown first class to Hawaii and you get to drive a car around the islands and stay in a five-star hotel and eat, you know, endless, you know, platters of shrimp and drink top shelf cocktails. And, you know, some journalists have a hard time saying that there's anything wrong with that particular car. So I mean, and they're not all, you know, bought off by the manufacturer. Consumer Reports definitely keeps its independence. We also don't take advertising. So our whole mission is buy the products that everyone else buys, test them fairly and independently, and produce the results. And sometimes it might be we're going to test a particular brand that you love and it's going to do well. And sometimes we're going to test the brand you love and it doesn't do well. And yeah, that's really our mission.
Talk to us about the testing center. What's it like there? And what's it like to put some of these cars through their paces in order to write the reviews that you write? And are you basically like Mario Andretti going crazy out there on the track with these cars, or how does that work?
Well, because of COVID, I've had to spend a lot of time working at home, but seeing I only live 15 minutes from the track, I do get to the track at least once or twice a week to do hands-on testing and stuff. And when I'm at the track in my little desk, I look over my shoulder out the window and I see 327 acres of test track devoted to testing cars and testing tires.
Sounds like fun.
When coworkers are out there and I hear the tires squealing. I hear the engines roaring. It really is pretty cool. And it is a serene place where the track is. I mean, people say, oh, Consumer Reports is a bunch of white-coated toaster testers. Listen, you know, my coworkers own race cars. My coworkers own off-road vehicles. My coworkers own motorcycles. We follow Formula One. We follow NASCAR. We follow international rallying. You know, we just eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff, and to have an opportunity to do that for a company like an organization like Consumer Reports is really special. I try to remind, you know, we all have days of work where like, oh God, but I try to remind myself, you know, how lucky I am, and I'm getting really to do the work that I dreamed about when I was a kid.
That's cool.
You are the man for the job. So before we're going to dive into things to consider for somebody who is buying a vehicle, whether new or used, or even electric vehicles, but kind of broadly speaking, let's talk about COVID, because we would love to hear how you've seen the car market shift since COVID. You know, like, obviously the biggest thing we've all heard about at this point is like the microchip shortages, the used and new markets. Because of that, it seems like they've defied gravity as prices have just really soared. And so can you give us some insight into, you know, why it is the car market has changed so drastically, and, you know, what the market is looking like currently at the moment?
Well, yeah, COVID certainly put a spotlight on the old, you know, economics 101 of supply and demand. Not much supply, pretty heavy demand, and prices through the roof. We've never had such an issue of buying test cars at Consumer Reports like we have in the last 2 years. We want to test more cars, we just can't get them. And if we can get them, we're paying above MSRP, which absolutely kills me, because, you know, I hate spending more money than I have to for the test cars. I mean, I know it's not my money, but I still want to drive a hard bargain just like everybody else. So the automotive market has seen a big hit in terms of supplying new cars to consumers because of the microchip shortage. It's still going on. The reports that I read suggest it's going to continue into 2023. And as you mentioned, as you alluded to before, that has also impacted the used car market. So people want to buy a new car. They can't even get one, or the prices are just crazy. So they head to the used car market. And early COVID definitely saw a big jump in used car prices as well. Industry reports suggest that used car pricing is leveling off a little bit. Supply is kind of keeping up with demand, and so prices aren't quite as crazy as they used to. But some of the advice that we've been giving out is, if you're in a household that maybe has an extra car or a car that you rarely use, it's a good time to sell it, because you're probably going to get a decent price for it.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and we want to focus a lot on used cars here in just a second, because used cars typically, from a personal finance standpoint at least, that's the best way for folks to go, at least for folks who want to prioritize other elements like saving and investing more, which we're all about. But let's talk about buying new cars for a second, because some people, I guess, they assume when they're buying a new car that, you know, reading the reviews and stuff like that is helpful, and which is great. They also need to make sure that they can afford this new car before they go in to start taking a look around the dealership. But what else do people need to know? Let's say people are like, no, I am going to buy new, and we're okay with people buying new, especially if they're going to keep it for 10 years or so. But how can people ensure that they are buying the right car for them if they're looking to buy a new car?
I think you need to be realistic about how you're going to use the car. Years ago, a pickup truck was a work vehicle, but pickup trucks became almost like status symbols and became family cars. I mean, you know, these enormous half ton and three quarter ton trucks are kind of the mom and dad station wagons of today's, you know, families. And yeah. and it's to me, it's kind of crazy, because unless you're towing a trailer on a regular basis, you're hauling lots of stuff in a bed, driving a pickup truck, especially the huge ones, on a day-to-day basis is such a pain. Not only is it difficult to park, it costs a lot of money for gasoline or diesel. And so I think the advice is understand exactly how you're going to use a car. If you're a new family, you have one child, You don't necessarily need a three-row SUV. That's, I mean, it's just so an overkill.
True.
Yep. So I think people waste a lot of money by buying more than they need and spending above their monthly threshold. I mean, a lot of people are getting so in debt with car payments that they get underwater on their loans. If they're taking, you know, out 8-year loans for a depreciating asset, I mean, I don't have to tell you smart economic guys that's kind of nutty. But I mean, people are winding up owing more than the car is worth. And so that's pretty precarious as well.
Well, so aside from kind of these bigger, more luxurious vehicles, like what features do you see folks kind of leaning towards, like when they're looking to buy new? Like, you know, are folks leaning more towards, are they looking at technology and safety features, maybe like more than like torque and horsepower? Like that used to be all that was ever talked about when I was a kid growing up. about like the performance. And so I'm curious to hear if you've noticed some trends when it comes to what it is folks are looking for.
Well, in Consumer Reports nationwide surveys, we ask that question, and quite often, I mean, the number one answer on the board is ding, you know, price. They want to make sure that they're not. They want to get a good deal. They don't want to spend too much. But after price, people are concerned about fuel economy. They're concerned about safety. And the buzz is really, you know, all about electric cars. Now, electric cars can fit the needs of a lot of people. I think the average commute in the United States is 40 miles or less. And all the new EVs these days can do that without breaking a sweat. But for a lot of people, the answer might not be an EV. It might be a hybrid. Or a plug-in hybrid, and the differences of a regular hybrid like the Toyota Prius is just a gasoline engine that has a little electric motor on board, and under low throttle conditions, it can just cruise along on all electric power. And then when you need more power, the gas engine kicks in, and you get great fuel economy. A plug-in hybrid like the Toyota RAV4 Prime, you plug into your home outlets or a level 2 charger if you have one. You get about 40 miles of all electric driving, and then it just reverts to a regular RAV4 hybrid, so you're bouncing back and forth between the gas and electric power. So I mean, when people talk about electrification, there's many forms of it, but that's really what a lot of people are talking about these days when it comes to buying a car.
Let's say someone has a make and a model picked out. Let's talk about the buying process for just a second. You know, the Costco has become one of the biggest places for people to go to buy a car. Costco is a great car buying service. Should people start someplace like there, or should they start shopping online? What sort of process works best for people when it comes to finding the car that they want, the new vehicle they want, at the best possible price?
I think you have to be ready to travel. A lot of times people just want to go to their local dealer because it's easy, but the local dealers might not have the inventory. So if you're interested in, say, that Honda Accord, but you can't find one within 50 miles, but you might be able to find one maybe 75 miles, 100 miles, you have to be ready to travel. And you have to be ready to buy quickly. The inventory on dealers' lots right now are not lasting that long. So if you can find something that you're interested in, it's far away, go ahead and be ready to travel and buy it, because any local dealer will honor any factory warranty. You don't have to get it serviced where you buy it necessarily. Be ready to travel to buy, and have your financing set up ahead of time. You know, go to your credit union, go to your bank, find out what loans you qualify for, and have it all ready to go, so you don't have to jump through hoops thinking, well, you know, am I going to be able to get a loan and blah blah blah. So, you know, do as many steps ahead as you can. But really, the key thing here is be ready to go wherever the inventory is, and maybe for a fee that the dealer would even deliver it to you. You know, depending on the dealer, depending on the car.
If they're trying to unload that particular model and you just happen to be in the market for this kind of weird looking Toyota or what have you, but that's some sage advice, Mike. So that's, you know, a few things when it comes to buying a new vehicle. But of course, the best way to save the most money is by buying used. And we've got a lot of questions for Mike on buying used cars right after the break. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, we are back. We're still talking with Consumer Reports' Mike Quincy. We're talking about, we're going to get to cheap cars, and we're going to get to the future of electric vehicles, because that is something that, as people are adopting EVs more and more and more, like, what's going to happen and our price is going to come down. We're going to get to that. But Mike, we want to specifically hone in here on used cars. But I also just want to ask you too, like, what do you think about the trade-off of like excitement and joy that cars can bring versus the utility that's required? You talked about people buying more car than they need and how that costs them too much. Some folks really do have like this passion for cars, whereas people like me, at least, I see them as point A to point B transportation. I'm totally fine driving a 2006 minivan, and that's the only car that our family has. But other people would be like, no, I'm passionate about it. I care about the looks and the performance and what's going on. So how do you suggest people think about that trade-off?
I'm not one to talk about separating, you know, passion from cars, because there are cars that I just genuinely love, and love to drive. I love the styling. I love the exhaust note. It just literally, you know, drives my being every waking moment. So I'm not gonna be able to give you like a rational answer.
Joel, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like you know, does anyone, you know, need a, you know, 500 horsepower Corvette? No. But are they wicked cool? Oh yeah. Cars, you know, cars are like a lot of hobbies. You know, the exotic ones that they might give you such satisfaction in driving, but they also can be, you know, fragile, or the parts replacements are really high. And I mean, I guess one key test of a great passionate car is, can it break your heart? And you know, if you have your heart set on that, you know, 1975 Alfa Coupe, because of the Italian styling and the way that the engine sounds running through the gears, you also have to be ready for your heart to be absolutely broken because of its, you know, somewhat unreliable lineage. So, I mean, you know, it would make a lot of sense if 80% of the world, you know, drove a hybrid like a Toyota Prius. And the Prius, listen, I'm not going to knock the Prius. It has this, you know, five-door hatchback design. It's like a little station wagon, 52 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports testing, and literally 20 years of incredible reliability. But is it a ball of fire to drive? Absolutely not. But I totally get why we have this car in the world, as well as a 5-liter V8 Mustang GT, which I also love. So I mean, you know, automotive passions and rationality. Yes, you're absolutely talking to the wrong guy.
Well, I mean, just like you said, there's a place for both of those vehicles in the world, and so much of it does come down to where you are on your own, you know, money journey, where your personal finances are. And maybe we'll come up with some sort of scale where if you have a net worth of X amount, maybe this is like up to this amount seems reasonable. Yeah. If this is something that you are incredibly passionate about, like Mike Quincy is.
I want a Rivian. I think I'd have a lot of fun with it, but it's just a little outside of my ballpark right now.
I mean, if you're working hard, if you've been smart with your money, if you saved your money, and you've always wanted a Porsche 911, well, by golly, you know, you should, if you can afford it, you should have it. I mean, yes, is it a bad, should you take that $150,000 and put it into the bond market or you know, probably. But I think, you know, we talked about the ravages of cancer. And I mean, listen, my dad died when he was 60 years old. He did everything right in terms of planning for his retirement and saving money and investing. And he was into spreadsheets way before like computers use them now. And he figured out exactly how much money he was going to need to go golfing and to go fishing. And, wow. And he died at 60, and he didn't get to enjoy a dime of it. My mom did. So there's a silver lining there. So, I mean, I guess the moral of my story here is you, if you work hard and you really have always wanted something, then you should find a way to get it, because I don't think we have as much time as we think we do. So while you have it, while you have the time, while you have your health, if you can afford it, then go get that Mazda Miata, put the top down, and be thankful for every second the sun is shining.
I love it. Yeah, I think there's something about finding that balance. And I mean, it sounds like that's what you're all about. You've seen both ends of it and figuring out where that is for you. Okay. On that note, let's talk about being financially responsible, though, like buying the used car. You already talked about being realistic with how it is that we're going to use vehicles. But how would you recommend for folks to think through, like, whittling down a list of like makes and models to find out which car is going to suit them best?
Sure. And you are spot on. For a 2 or 3 year old used car is absolutely the best automotive value out there. It probably has a little bit of manufacturer's warranty left. It probably doesn't have that many miles. If it's, you know, relatively new, it has the latest safety features, which is really good. And it's gone through the biggest depreciation hit. I mean, the biggest cost for owning a new car in the first couple of years is depreciation. So you have somebody else take that hit, you buy the used car, and you're still going to have, you know, miles and miles and probably years and years of pretty reliable transportation. Now, in terms of narrowing down your choices of which models to buy, you know, the old expression is the best new cars make the best used cars. So in Consumer Reports reliability surveys, year in and year out, we see the most reliable cars coming from Toyota, from Honda, from Subaru, from Mazda. And that's really the way to start when it comes to looking for a used car, because with a used car, I think the most important thing is to look at is reliability. You know, how are they holding up? And Consumer Reports surveys its members twice a year to find out what went wrong with your car in the last 12 months and how satisfied are you with it? And those make up our overall ratings. And so to hear from other people how their car is holding up, how happy they are with it is really, I would say, the best place to start.
Yeah, no, I think that's good advice. And I think for folks who are looking to buy a car, and if they were to ask me what one thing should I look at before I start going out there and test driving used vehicles, I would say the Consumer Reports reliability metric is a great thing to take a look at. It's going to give you a lot of insight into whether or not that particular make and model is going to make sense for you. It largely, you know, for years moving forward, whether or not it's going to be a money pit or whether or not it's going to be mostly reliable. But I guess my question for you too is like, there can be a difference between even just specific years, right? A specific model. Yeah. So the 2017 score car version might score really high. The 2018 model might look like it should be avoided. Is that typically like model year changeovers? What's happening there that can change the reliability from a car that was great to now it's not such a great buy?
Great question. We get that actually a lot. The truth is that every year, the reliability data that we have can change. And some models are almost never affected by it. I mentioned the Toyota Prius before. I mean, these things are awesome, you know, year in and year out. Other models like cars from Volkswagen, for example, they always seem to be like on the edge of reliable, slightly below average in reliability. So they're not a sure bet. And you're also spot on about the new model year changeovers. When a car has been redesigned, typically we find a higher problem rate in that first model year redesign. And it can happen to anyone. It can happen to even top-notch manufacturers like Lexus, like Honda, like Acura. That they're bringing in lots of new electronics these days, a lot of computerization. Cars are almost more software these days than hardware, or they're trying out a new 8, 9, 10 speed automatic transmission, which can be problematic. So, I mean, typically the best, most reliable model is in the last year of its design, because by then most manufacturers have worked out the bugs. The riskier ones are the first model year. I mean, you mentioned Rivian before, and Consumer Reports has a Rivian pickup truck in our test fleet right now, and we've seen a few problems with it. And it is, you know, not only is it the first model year production, but it's the first car of a brand new car company. And so I understand the early adopter thing and all that, but the advice is wait a model year before diving in to the new ones, and look at Consumer Reports reliability charts, where you can see clearly what year is highlighted of the new model year design and the changeover and how the data might have changed.
Shopping around for a used car, like, where would you recommend for folks to do that? Because I think it could be, it's difficult to know whether you should go to a dealership or if you should go to one of the online sites like Carvana, you know, CarMax, or if you should skip that altogether and then maybe go private sale, go with something listed on Craigslist or Facebook. What would you suggest for folks out there looking for a solid used car?
There's a risk in any approach, and they all have their pros and cons. I think that the first place to start is you get on your local Facebook page, or you use social media and you ask people that live in your town, hey, where have you had success buying a used car? Who do you trust? Sometimes just a local mechanic will get a great reputation for taking cars, refurbishing them, and backing them up if anything goes wrong. Other places to turn to might be new car dealers, because they usually have a pretty good supply of used cars on hand. Now, the downside of that is the prices are going to tend to be higher going to the new car dealerships. But they also offer certified pre-owned cars. And by certified, the consumer has to be real careful about that term, because any, you know, Joe Smith used car lot can say, it's certified. It doesn't really mean anything unless it's backed up by the factory. And by the factory, yeah. I mean Toyota, Nissan, Honda, Ford. You know, mm-hmm. Ford says, this is a certified used car backed by our factory. We're going to stand behind the components. We're going to give you a certain amount of warranty to it. Now that gives a used car buyer a little bit more reassurance, which might be worth it, but you'll probably pay a little bit extra for a certified pre-owned car. But again, you have that backing of a factory warranty. But I think the best place to start is ask around, ask your neighbors. Where do they go? Who do they trust? And that's, you know, that's also the same advice for finding a good reliable mechanic. You ask around, you ask people, because you know the one-on-one personal recommendations can be worth their weight in gold.
Yeah. All right. So I saw Consumer Reports recently published an article that outlined the best cars that are under $5,000. And I love that you guys are still publishing articles like this, because I feel like we get pushback because when we talk about buying super cheap cars, which we think can be a financial superpower. If you're buying a car that's in that $5,000 range, you have so much money. Most people have so much money left over to do other more awesome things with. And like we talked about at the beginning, so many people are cash strapped because they've spent too much on a car. Right. Do you think it's possible still to find something that's reliable, that's in decent condition, that's in that $5,000 range, even with inflation and car prices having gone up? Can people still find something decent at that price point?
It's possible, but as you mentioned, during this environment, it's increasingly difficult, because most people that are going to have a relatively inexpensive used car might know what it's worth. And again, if they're not relying on it for their daily transportation, they know they can get top dollar for it, either selling it to themselves or taking it to CarMax, who will also probably give you a lot more money than a normal market value. So to answer your question, yes, you can get a $5,000 car. I think I would broaden it a little bit to say, think $5,000 to $10,000. Because $5,000 car might get you something that's completely, what is it, the expression, driven hard and put away wet, which means, that it just had a really tough life. And any money that you think you're saving buying a really inexpensive used car, you might have to just put right back into the repairs just to keep it running. So there's kind of short-term thinking and long-term thinking. But I mean, some good used cars, and I'm going to say, again, I'm saying in the $5,000 to $10,000 price range, a Toyota Prius C, a Mazda 6, a Nissan Murano. I mean, ranging in model years from 2012 to 2013. These are particular makes and models that have done well in Consumer Reports testing, have been pretty reliable, have decent amounts of safety features. So they're out there. But you got to look hard. I mean, there's a great website that I use all the time. It's called cars.com, and you can punch in makes, models, years, whether it's new, whether it's used, and do a range of search anywhere from locally 25 miles away to nationwide. So I use that website all the time. I think it's really handy to buy looking for new or used models.
Great. Awesome. Well, hey, Mike, we've got a couple more questions to get to with you. Specifically, we want to talk about electric vehicles, because they're the future, but in the present, they're pretty darn expensive for most folks. So like, how soon is that future coming? We want to get to that and more right after this.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch, they make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
All right, we are talking with Mike Quincy from Consumer Reports, and we're going to get into that electric vehicle portion of our conversation, which we kind of jumped into a little bit. But Mike, it seems like a lot of Americans are finding themselves interested, at least, in electric vehicles, right? Even if they're not necessarily lined up, they haven't put down their $100 or $1,000 or whatever to get on the queue, they are still at least interested in them. California, they're mandating the end of gas-powered cars by, I think, 2035. And so, what is it that you think is going to happen in the electric vehicle market moving forward as far as the speed of adoption and how quickly a lot of folks are going to be switching over to electric?
So, about your comment, people are, they make noises about it. They're interested in it. The way I look at it is when you go through the December holidays and we're all ready to celebrate New Year's Eve, and people are have that New Year's resolution. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to join a gym. I'm going to go. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to get in shape. And that's my intention. I'm going to do that. So right now, the market is showing that, yes, people have intentions about buying an EV. They're interested in buying an EV. But the EV market still is about maybe, I think last time I checked, was maybe 4%. 4% of like what a 16, 18 million unit, you know, retail side of selling cars. It's still a tiny percentage of the overall car buying market. And that isn't to like brush it off and say we're not taking them seriously, because we are. Certainly Consumer Reports is buying all the new EVs that are coming out. I mentioned that Mercedes EQS, which stickers around $125,000, and we bought ours and had a few more options. It's actually a $135,000 car. It's the most expensive car Consumer Reports has ever tested, but it certainly is, you know, can represent the cutting edge of EV technology. Now, do people have to spend that much money for an electric vehicle? Oh, heck no. Absolutely not. In fact, you could go to your Chevrolet dealer and check out the Bolt line. They have two EVs called Bolts. One is an SUV and one is a smaller car. They're still, you know, running about $36,000 to $40,000, which is a fair amount of money for a somewhat small car. But I think that is just going to be the price of admission right now for EV buyers.
Yeah.
You know, there are others out there. I really like the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Google it. It looks like space age. It drives really well. It has great handling. It has great balance. About 250, 300 miles of range, I think. I'm not a huge fan of EVs because I do think they are expensive. I'm a road trip guy, so EVs definitely have a limitation in terms of, you know, driving for hours on end. But in terms, if I don't actually own a car, people say, what car do you own? Because I drive all the test cars, I actually don't own a car. But if I wanted to get an EV, I would definitely look at the Ioniq 5.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned a couple of budget EVs, and we've talked about some of the Chevy models, on the show, because they seem to be
the Equinox that was just announced. That's going to be like
I forget which model it is from Chevy that's going to be so cheap, but it seems like sadly the EV market, at least where it kind of started with the Nissan Leaf, was with pretty inexpensive budget model, granted, incredibly low range vehicles, but we're seeing just fancier and fancier electric vehicles, fewer and fewer in that inexpensive category. That seems to be probably at least part of the holdup, right? EV adoption and the fact that people are like, well, I guess if it's going to be this expensive, maybe I'll just keep going with a gas model.
Well, there is that. I mean, the one of the hits against an electric car is it's a pretty high price of emission. I mean, you mentioned the Nissan Leaf. That's still one of the more affordable EVs out there. And listen, hand it to Nissan for seeing this technology many years ago and refining their little Leaf and making it better. And even a used Leaf can be a great deal if you don't need a vehicle with you know, tons of cruising range. You're not driving hundreds of miles every day or anything like that. But to your point, I spent the weekend driving Consumer Reports' new Audi Q5 e-tron, which is sort of the company's entry level electric vehicle. It's sized like between the Q3 and the Q5. I mean, it totally looks the part of an EV SUV, but it was $60,000. And still, they'd say, well, it's less money than the Tesla, you know, Model S and the Mercedes EQS and the, you know, all these others. But still, 60 grand is still a lot of money. We joked before we started recording this that, you know, I work for a nonprofit organization, so there are like Wall Street bonuses waiting for me at the end of the fiscal year. And yes, I would love to have a nice exotic sports car in my garage. No, I'm not starving, but still, for a household like mine, I work full time. My wife works part time. 60 grand is way too much for us to have like for a household vehicle. And I don't, you know, I don't even know if at that price point is Audi making any money on this car. Are they just, you know, kind of breaking even? Are they getting, as you mentioned, California? Are they getting ready? I mean, all the automakers getting ready for not only California but much of the world. A lot of the major cities in Europe are going to be banning, you know, internal combustion engine cars. And so what are they going to do now in terms of the state of California banning them? You know, in 2035. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying they're not good intentioned, but I will say, let's see. I mean, how many exceptions are you going to have? If you're a contractor, you need a pickup truck that isn't going to cost you $100,000 like a Rivian or the Ford Lightning. You need to be hauling a trailer. You need a big van to do your work. And there isn't the technology right now for them to be able to do that with an all-electric affordable vehicle. Yeah. Now, you know, again, I don't know the ins and outs of the laws. I don't know the exceptions that are going to be out there. But I guess I would just want to say, well, let's see how this pans out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. So what we're talking about, just the upfront costs that are just massive. And what's kind of interesting, you know, the U.S. Department of Energy, they reported that EVs are actually, they're more affordable, but over the long term. Right. Mm-hmm. Compared to their gas counterparts, you just have to hang on to them for like a really long time. I think that report said something like 15 years. There's been other reports that say it's actually closer to 10 years. So I got two questions for you. A, like, is that even realistic for most consumers to actually hang on to a vehicle that long before they were to actually see a benefit, you know, when it does come to cost? And then, you know, like what do you think will tip the scales so that EVs are going to be more affordable in the near term for most buyers out there?
I think we're still compiling data on the kinds of repair costs that EV owners are going to be seeing. I mean, every, you know, components wear out, components break. How much is a battery pack going to cost to replace? Some suggest, you know, a battery pack might cost around $5,000 to $6,000. But that is, you know, roughly the same as an engine replacement for you know, a mid-range gasoline vehicle. And, you know, a battery pack can last, you know, 8 to 10 years so far. That's what we're seeing. We're still kind of in the infancy of mass market EV sales. So gathering this data is going to take a little bit of time. The cost of an EV is a bit more upfront. But, you know, charging your EV at home can save you $800 to $1,000 a year over an equivalent gas car. An EV can cost, you know, around $4,000 or $5,000 less to maintain over time compared to gas cars. And that's, you know, so there is no magic bullet here. That there, every approach that you take, you're going to have your pros and cons. And while I was probably reluctant to jump on the EV bandwagon, and I'm not really fully on now, but I do understand them more, and I do get why they can make a lot of sense for a lot of people. But let's think for a second, and I don't have the data to answer this, but, you know, what is the percentage of people in the United States that live in an apartment? The people that live in a place that where they have to, if they have a car, they have to do street parking. What are those folks going to do when it comes to buying an electric vehicle? Because you're going to be stringing an extension cord from your fifth story apartment window in New York City down to your car parked on the street. You just can't do that. So there's, you know, we kind of assume that EV potential EV owners live in a house. What if you don't live in a house? Or you do live in a house, but you don't have a garage. You don't have a driveway. You live in a house, but you have on-street parking. So there's that. And also the other, you know, downside of an EV is the electric charging infrastructure is just not there yet. We don't have gas stations. You know, we don't have EV charging stations as ubiquitous as gas stations. So that's kind of an issue too. And you know, whether or not government programs are going to be spurring on more charging stations, probably. I mean, you know, the gasoline industry certainly got help from the government when it was getting formed in the early 1900s. We built roads, we gave subsidies, and you know, it seems fair to that if the EV industry is going to ask for the same thing, we should consider it. I think that EVs definitely have a place in the world. I think that, you know, most people's electricity is not coming from really dirty sources. Yes, there are still some coal-fired plants. There are still some plants, energy facilities that are not kind to the environment. But if you can get solar, if you can get wind, if you can get hydro, which is a lot of the case out west, then it is definitely better for the environment for more people to drive EVs just in terms of exhaust emissions. But again, how deep do you want to get into this? I mean, what are we doing to the environment to get the minerals for the batteries? I mean, it's a huge discussion. But like I said, there's no easy answers.
The easiest thing when we're talking about what's better for the environment is to drive what we have longer.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
that's one of those
yeah.
things. People don't want to talk about that, but it's always about new and future and greenification of everything new. And there's some good to some of that, but it's also like, let's use less and let's use what we have for a longer period of time. And that will inevitably be a greener solution as well.
By far the least sexy answer
advocating
for green energy.
You're doing a podcast about money. I mean, that's absolutely 100% true. The best way to spend your automotive dollars, buy a good, reliable car and drive it. My wife has a 2002 Camry that's still running pretty good, and it doesn't cost us a lot of money. So you spread, I'm telling you guys this. This is ridiculous for me to even say. You spread those costs over a 20-year period, your per mile cost is pretty low. But I agree with
That's
you.
Right.
You know, keep something for a long time. But you have, you know, your neighborhoods where you need to be the first person on the block to have something. Teslas became status symbols. You got to keep up with the Joneses, which is capitalism, right? But there's a downside.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to move to a different neighborhood so that you don't have to feel the pressure, right?
I guess. Or you just get older like me and you just stop caring.
That's right. You become a curmudgeon and you stop caring. That's my goal. That's where I'm at.
Pretty much.
I want to ask one last question of you, Mike. I want to know about the future of stick shift vehicles. And my guess is you're going to tell me that there is no future. My first car was a stick. I missed driving a stick. It was a blast. Like, I love driving that thing. And part of me considers, if we ever do need a second vehicle, like, man, I'm going to go for some like 1990s stick shift model because I just want that back in my life.
Mid-90s manual transmission Toyota pickup truck.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I would get.
That's what I would get, something like that. But my guess is you're going to tell me no one's making them anymore and they're basically completely dead at this point.
So I know this is an audio podcast, right? So you mentioned manual transmission cars, and I just started weeping. I'm just shedding tears of ultimate sadness. Yes, this is the emotional side of the guy that works for Consumer Reports. There are still manual transmissions out there. Even Ford announced its redesigned Mustang is still going to be offered with a manual transmission. One of the best manual transmission cars out there. From its inception to this day is the Mazda Miata. It is a joy to drive. They still sell them. It's awesome. The manual transmissions definitely are a dying breed. You know, seeing as I'm a car guy and my oldest son, he insisted on learning how to drive a manual transmission. And he drives a 2015 Honda Civic Si with, you know, a real clutch and a real shifter. And he says, you know, Dad, this is kind of like an anti-theft device because none of my friends can drive this car.
Nobody's going to drive this
car. No club necessary.
You know? So I share your enthusiasm. I love to shift for myself. I am grateful for every car that is, you know, newer. Used that is still available with a manual, and I will always try to seek one out to drive whenever I can. We have a couple at the track. A Subaru just redesigned its BRZ along with the Toyota GR86, which are these really cool rear-wheel drive two-door coupes that have great manual transmissions. They're so much fun on the track, and they don't cost $125,000. They're super affordable. They're one of the best like fun per dollar. If there's a formula there, that's right up there. Those two are right up there with like a Miata.
Well, maybe we will join you up there on the track and we can tool around with some of those rear-wheel drive.
Just waiting on that invite,
vehicles.
You know?
You guys make it to Connecticut, I will definitely give you a first-class track tour.
Sweet.
As long as they've got those heated seats, because it might be the winter before we're up there. Mike, listeners who are considering either a new car or a used car, where is it that they can go to figure out which make, which model that they should consider?
Well, definitely check out consumerreports.org. That's our website that is most of the stuff on there. I tell you right up front, it's a subscription base, because that's how we fund everything that we do. We rely on people's memberships to give us money so they can see the good stuff. And so go to consumerreports.org. We still have magazines on the newsstands. We have a monthly magazine. We have new car buying guides, used car buying guides on the newsstand. And check out our YouTube channel, where we have our Talking Cars podcast, which is always a lot of fun. It's usually me and a bunch of other guys talking about the car that we're driving this week, a featured car. We take audience questions. Later in November, we're going to have our latest reliability and owner satisfaction survey results are out. And that is going to move the bar for all kinds of manufacturers. Some makes and models will lose their recommendations. Some will gain new ones, which the boardrooms are going to be jumping around saying, "Yay, look at that! They like us." So definitely check back later in November to get the new survey results and see where your favorite car fared.
It's kind of like European soccer regulation or whatever, relegation, right?
Yes, exactly.
So we're going to lose the spot. Awesome. Well, Mike, this has been a great conversation, man. Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Matt, that was a great convo with car expert Mike Quincy.
It was.
And, man, I love Consumer Reports, so just getting the...
A, Consumer Reports is awesome.
Right.
Mike's awesome. Mike's great, man. It's really cool to talk to somebody who is very clearly living out their passion. Yeah. Right? Like, this guy loves cars. Like he said, he like eats, breathes, drinks cars, him and all of his buddies. That's all they talk about. It's obvious. And so it's a lot of fun to talk to somebody who's as passionate about something as we are, personal finances and beer.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of our listeners care more about cars than we do. And so I'm glad that we had somebody on like that.
That's true.
We usually talk about it from a purely utilitarian standpoint.
Whenever you do get a hankering for the Rivian.
Yeah. One of these days, maybe I'll wait a few model years now after talking.
I know. It kind of changes the perspective a little bit, where you're like, okay, maybe we're going to wait. Yeah. Like you said, 2 or 3 years. I feel like they'll have enough models.
It's going to take me that long to save up anyway.
Probably. So. It'll take you that long to actually pull the trigger.
Right.
Even if you do have that money saved up.
Exactly. All right. So what was your big takeaway from this combo?
My big takeaway was for listeners out there to be realistic with how it is that you're going to use a vehicle. I think oftentimes we get married to this idea of what role a vehicle, whether it's a truck or an SUV or a car, the role that it's going to play in our lives. But oftentimes that's just so overblown. And so he was talking about big old pickup trucks that are capable of towing a yacht, basically. And maybe once a year, maybe they'll throw some stuff in the back of the truck after they go to Lowe's or Home Depot with some building supplies. We don't often fully utilize our vehicles.
By the way, minivans,
that we think we will.
Minivans can be like pickup trucks in a lot of ways. Can I say you can fit just as much stuff in the back of a minivan, almost as much stuff at least, as you can in a pickup truck.
You can put a 4x6 sheet of plywood or sheetrock in the back of a minivan.
Underutilized, underappreciated the minivan.
Minivans are where it's at.
No,
that's
but I like that.
You drive a Honda Odyssey, Homer, and I drive a Honda Odyssey, Hal.
That's right. Well, and a lot of people...
Listeners named them, if you're wondering.
A lot of people would be well-served to think about that in advance, specifically like spending extra on certain features like four-wheel drive, which can add a lot, especially on the cost of a new car. Like, think about whether or not you're actually going to use that before you spring for that.
If you are, how often are you going to use it?
Yeah.
Right? Because like I'm thinking about the pickup truck thing. It costs like $25 to go to Home Depot and rent one of those giant trucks, one of the big old flatbeds. Yes, and you've got that thing for like 75 minutes. That's more than enough time to do the two trips a year that you might need something with that kind of utility.
That's exactly right. Yeah. All right. So I think what
about you though?
My big takeaway, I don't know, it's tough. There's so many good things, but I like that he expanded, because I kind of like to tell people they can get a good car for $5,000. But I think he's right. Things have changed a little bit. I don't know, maybe like 10 years ago, I remember buying a Nissan Altima that lasted me for 7 years. And it was $3,200. And then the car that we have now, the minivan, was $5,000. So I think most people assume that it can't be done. That's just impossible. And so they are looking at those 2 to 3 year old cars, which I think can be smart for a lot of people. But if you're one of those people who's like, no, 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 I want to make even more progress with my personal finances, well, spending less on a car is going to be one of the best ways to be able to save and invest more. And you can. I think it's good to remind people, and we'll link to that specific article in the show notes that Consumer Reports published, but you can buy a $5,000 to $10,000 used car.
It's possible.
And it can treat you well, right? It can treat you well, and it's not going to necessarily cost a ridiculous amount in repair costs. So I like that Mike said that. I will probably preach the gospel of the cheap old used car until I die.
And you'll have to, because you'll need to maintain that old beater if you are also going to buy a brand new Rivian. Or maybe two-year-old. I don't know. You'll see. We'll see. Let's introduce folks to the beer. You and I, we enjoyed a Witch's Brew Ale. This is from Talisman Brewing Company. And this was a beer that was donated to the show by our friend Andy. Andy, longtime listener to the podcast. I'm glad that he was able to drop some of these beers off for us to enjoy here on the show. But what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting. This one had, it says that it was brewed with spices. And it doesn't say which spices. So my guess, I'm just guessing here, allspice, some clove, maybe a little nutmeg. There were some interesting vibes going on, especially with the orange peel. It almost tastes like one of those hottie toddies that Emily will make me when I'm sick, like with the tea with a little bourbon thrown in there. So this was,
where it makes you think you're taking medicine.
Right.
But in reality, you're just like, I'm just doing this because it tastes good.
That's right.
It doesn't actually make me better.
So I thought this one was good. It's a Kolsch in particular. And so it had like a lot of stuff going on, but it was all working together really nicely.
Totally. Yeah. I'm totally with you on the nutmeg. And I'll say like some ginger as well. Like as I'm smelling the glass now after I've finished my beer, it almost smells like a gingerbread cookie.
Oh yeah,
like 100%. So because of that, it kind of gives it like this kind of buttery, almost like sort of smell and flavor to it, which I didn't pick up as much as I was drinking it. But after the fact, I'm like, wait a minute, did I just eat a fresh gingerbread cookie? Like that's how I feel right now. And so this was a really enjoyable beer. I'll be honest, when at first I didn't think I was going to like it as much, but I quickly finished mine off. It was quite tasty, and I'm glad you and I got to enjoy one of these today on the podcast, Joel.
Same here.
But that's going to be it. Listeners can find our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. We'll be sure to link to the article, Joel, that you just mentioned, as well as any other resources. But that's going to be it, man. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.